Casey. Always woof to the mothership KPFA Northern California team accomplices, and now a reciprocal blessing woof to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles, and to Roy of Hollywood, wonderful ancestor now, who, you know, in the middle of the night used to rebroadcast that show, just all homage to our allies, our accomplices. You know, this is a good time for the confluencing of all allies. So, cooling out the conflagration, guiding narratives from Los Angeles to the world. The community of the grieving is clearly expanding. We're all in this dream together. And after Monday, the inauguration, all we have is us, community, mutual aid. I myself have scheduled a colonoscopy for the inauguration day, meaning in my body and the body politic. Let's move it all out. So we are welcoming Mike Rothschild, denizen of Altadena, California, whose eloquent elegy brought its convivial spirit alive from the smoldering ruins, beautiful writing, into kinship, and tease us all into pertinence for us all. So Mike Rothschild, journalist, author, conspiracy expert. Oh, that's perfect. These are the important things. His books, The Storm is Upon Us. Yes, in every way, right? Jewish Space Lasers. His website is themikeroths.com. Welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, well, I ran across, yes, Blue Sky has value. It's like, oh, and your beautiful, beautiful writing, you know, and Altadena. And as you were writing, I was like, oh, what a beautiful place. It reminds me of District 6 in South Africa that was also destroyed. But if you want to guide us into Altadena and your fervent desire for, you know, for it to rise, you know, anywhere you want to go is good. And then, of course, we do want to get into disinformation, and I have that quite wonderful clip to play later in our conversation. So, yeah.
Sure. My family and I have lived in Altadena, which is just north of Pasadena. We've lived in our house for 7.5 years, and it's a 100-year-old cottage. It was built in 1925. And, you know, the story of how this all happened, you know, you've been hearing a lot of these stories, but it's really the details that I think ground each individual experience, because even other families that we've talked to who evacuated and lost their homes, their story is a little bit different. You know, the time they got the alert is different. What they were able to take with them, if they were able to take anything with them, it's all very different. So with us, you know, we started having the Santa Ana winds really hitting us probably Tuesday morning. We had a mature avocado tree, and one of the large branches was torn off, and a few of our roof tiles were torn off. And, you know, we just thought, you know, we've gone through this before, you know, it'll be okay. And about 6 o'clock that night, and the Palisades fire had already broken out by then. About 6 o'clock, I was getting home with our kids, and I saw in the distance, probably to the east, I believe, was the glow of the Eaton fire. And it was far away. And I just thought, oh, you know, that's going to get put out. It's not going to be a big deal. It's not going to, you know, everything's fine. We still had power at that point. So a couple of hours later then, we see the fire starting to creep across the mountains. And from our front porch, if you walked out of what used to be our front door and you just looked to the left, the mountains were right there. So in the distance, maybe about 9 o'clock, we could see the fire just sort of crawling across the mountains. And we thought, okay, let's get some stuff. Let's pack some stuff up. We're probably not in any danger, but we may have to evacuate for a day or two. We grab, you know, priceless things off the walls, a signed photo from our wedding, signed photos from our kids' naming ceremonies, valuables, papers, documents, you know, a little bit of clothing. But we just didn't think we were going to have to go. We weren't even in the get set evacuation zone, much less to say the go zone. Our power went out probably about 10:30. It came back on about a half hour later. And we went to bed, and we just thought, you know, let's get some sleep. Let's see what is going on in the morning. 3:25 a.m., our phones blare with the alert to get out now. And we also get multiple texts from friends saying, we just got the notice, go. So, you know, our house by that point is pitch black. Our power's out. It's really cold. Our kids are freaking out. We're freaking out. We grab a few things. I threw on clothes, kind of, I don't really remember doing that. But we then just got in our two cars and we drove off. I think I locked the door. And we drove a couple of miles south to where my mother-in-law lives in Pasadena. And her house is fine. And we stayed there. And again, we just thought, you know, we have to evacuate, but the house is going to be okay. We've never had fire danger as far south from the mountains as we are. And then about 6:30 a.m., we get another alert saying we have to evacuate that part of Pasadena. And we headed out first to a church. And then that night, we headed east to Claremont, which is about 30, maybe 35 minutes east. And by that point, we knew our house was gone.
And I know you've said, you know, that you've been exhausted and doing so much storytelling, and we're very grateful you're here and the power of grief. And may this conversing and this show be replenishing to yourself, right? Replenishing to yourself, where you're taking us powerfully into empathy and kinship. And it is, you know, cooling out the conflagration, and then, you know, whenever you want to, you know, to and fro, you know, but the beautiful, beautiful things, you know, we'll play a clip about, you know, mutual aid and people being kind. And then one of your primary dedications, the toxicity of disinformation and cultic craziness that we want to cool out the conflagration in all ways, right? I mean, so we want to include that. And the cooling out, the conflagration, I watch over and over again. I don't know if you've seen it, but I'll post it on my Patreon and we'll guide people to your Patreon. The clip of American and I think Canadian helicopter pilots and plane pilots with just unbelievable brave competence, you know, scooping the water up, you know, out of the ocean and then precisely like on the Red Dragon.
Yeah.
It's like the goodness of humans and Mars cooling out the conflagration. I just keep that. Have you seen that? Have you seen that video?
I have seen different videos of the helicopter pilots and the tanker pilots. We actually saw some of the helicopters headed to and from the fires. And of course, one of the big issues and one of the things that people have been upset about is that early on in the first few hours after both Palisades and Eaton, the wind was so powerful that nothing could get in the air. It wouldn't have been safe. And I don't know that anything dropped on those fires would have made it there anyway. There are a number of natural factors that made the response extremely difficult. You know, any kind of fire like this, the response is going to be difficult. But I will say that the firefighters that I've seen, you know, even trying to get back into my neighborhood on Wednesday, trying to figure out what had happened to our house, the bravery and the professionalism that I've seen from everyone involved in trying to put these fires out has been absolutely heartwarming and, you know, really reaffirms your faith.
Yeah, the best of humans. There's a video also of just people on in you know a foot from the fire, just kicking dirt at it, and just forcing it back. And it's like, oh my god,
We have friends who saved their house actually by grabbing buckets basically and throwing water on embers. Everyone sort of had their own journey that night, and there was nothing planned about it, and it was entirely based on what was going on right near you.
Right, and then I don't know if you saw the story of the Malibu brain surgeon and his son, who had been preparing for this for years. I don't know if you saw this story, but again, we'll post it. You know,
no.
And so he had fire. He knew this was coming, right? So he had fire hoses and things, and he stayed behind even when it was like football sized things were falling on him and his son, and they thought we'll just paddle out into the ocean if we have to, and it was like 24 hours, but they were putting it out and protecting their house and six others. You know, just boom, 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 and they did it. And people said, weren't you frightened? He's like, no, I'm a brain surgeon. I did brain surgery before this. When you're in danger, you're just there. Anyway, so
yeah.
woof woof, woof woof to to that fellow as well, and the goodness rising up. And I mean, do you feel, well, you invoked Altadena so beautifully, as, you know, a working class multicultural brew. But people have been worried there. There was a climate scientist on Democracy Now! Who moved 2 years ago from Altadena. He said, I loved it, but I knew this was coming. I didn't know it would ever be this bad, he said. But did you have a sense? No, well, you just sort of described, like, no, this will be like normal, but no, nothing's normal now, right?
Well, nothing's normal. And we, so with Altadena, there was a fairly major street at the very, very north of the city, right at the base of the mountains, Loma Alta Drive. You maybe have seen it on the news. That was really considered the demarcation line for fire risk. And anything above that, you're getting into hiking trails, then you're eventually getting into Angeles National Forest, which is an absolutely gorgeous part of the world. Anything north of that, you know, you're kind of taking a real risk up there. But south of that, you know, it felt like there was too much concrete. Things were really spread out. You know, a lot of people now have drought resistant, you know, front lawns and things. We were at least a mile south of Loma Alta Drive. So you have the fire demarcation line. We were about a mile south of that. What really did it was the wind. And it was this powerful wind blowing embers every which way. And of course, everything was so dry because we'd had very little rain this winter. The last couple of winters have been very wet. We had a ton of rain the last couple of winters, but this winter there was almost nothing. And this combination of these incredibly fierce Santa Ana winds and this really dry brush, it really was a disaster that I don't think any of us really had a concept of how badly it could go and how quickly it could go.
Right. And we're gonna play the clip that I'd sent you. It meant to be edited, but here it is. You know, I'm Jess Craven. Just it's a 5 minute for all of us. But I think she hooks her arm through through yours and puts things out about community response and then, you know, disinformation. And we'll come back on the other side of that and dive into your realm. So here's Jess Craven.
Hey, so I want to talk to you about what's happening in Los Angeles right now, and then I want to ask for your help. Probably not in a way you might expect. So I got back to LA late on Saturday, and I want to tell you that there's a combination of things happening here right now. On the one hand, there is an incredible dynamic of people in the city rallying to support people who have lost their homes or people who cannot yet get into their homes. And that is another whole huge segment of people whose houses technically are standing, but who may never be able to go back to them or who certainly won't be able to for quite a long time. Yesterday, my child and I went and volunteered at a donation site, a pop-up site in Northeast LA. And this was just one of many dozens, scores of such sites that have arisen all around the city. And when I walked in, I was just floored. And I'll show you a picture, just a little bit of what it looked like, but it was sort of a large, I don't know, airplane hangar size space, just filled with donations from people. You know, very orderly, all the clothing was separated by, you know, size and style, type. There were toiletries, there were blankets, there were school supplies, there were shoes, there were sunglasses, there were everything you could imagine. It was like a giant sort of thrift store, although there were new items as well as used. Tons of volunteers there, you know, getting things distributed and folded neatly and taking out things that were damaged. And people coming and just walking through, taking things that they needed for their families, people crying, people with children. And this scene has played out and is playing out all over the city. Every business that is functioning is doing some kind of donation drive. Every school, there are about 20 families at my child's school who have either lost homes or otherwise been affected. They're doing donations for them. There is a beautiful collective effort right now to care for each other. It's very moving. If you've never been to Los Angeles, it's very easy to caricature the city. I used to do it. Of course it is flawed, but the people here are deeply wonderful and caring. And most likely, if you've experienced a disaster where you live, the people here have rallied to help you. And now they're rallying to help each other. So that is happening. We are also, however, waiting for more winds. And so we are in a period of about 24 hours before they start again. And while they're not supposed to be quite as strong as the last ones, they're going to be strong. And it is very likely that fires will spread or new fires will start. And so we're terrified. It's very scary. We're not out of the woods. And here's where we come to the help part. It's not so much about money, although of course there are many, many GoFundMes. I've got a GoFundMe in my thing in my bio. I've got 20 listed there that have been sort of curated as families who really, really need the help and aren't getting as much help as others. And if you email me, I'll send you a list. I'm kind of trying to switch out and just make sure that everybody I know who needs help is getting a little. So there's that. There's lots of good lists out there of places that you can give. But the other thing is, I just cannot emphasize enough how much the like hatred, blame, disinformation is just brutal for us right now. Nobody here is interested in blame. We all understand this is a climate change related event. We live here. I've lived here for so long. I've watched the weather change. We have not had any rain this winter, less than an inch, none, right? California, it used to, when I was a kid and came out here, it rained all winter long. This winter, we've had none. And all that greenery is dry. And winds 80 miles an hour came and we had a firestorm. It is no one's fault except for the oil and gas companies who have made this climate crisis as bad as it is and lied to you and lied to everybody and bought politicians to keep prolonging pro-fossil fuel policies. That's who's at fault. So here is the help I am actually asking for. Stop. Stop. Stop blaming Karen Bass. Stop blaming Gavin Newsom. Stop blaming liberals. Stop. We are suffering. We are scared. We are grief-stricken and devastated, and we don't know what is going to happen tomorrow and whether we will ever be safe again. We are terrified for our children's futures and, quite frankly, your children's as well. And whether or not you know it yet, this is coming for you as well. So the compassion that you show now will come back to you later. Blame is harm right now. Please stop trying to find someone to blame because you're probably wrong. Just help us. And if all you can do is stop spreading disinformation and hatred and finger pointing, please do that. This is a really hard and scary situation. We're not out of the woods. Pray for us. Send donations if you want, but stop. Just send love. That is what we need. Thank you.
Okay, team, that was Jess Craven contributing to our conversation with Mike Rothschild here. So that's strong, don't you think? I mean, the community, I just want to toss to you, community responding, care for each other. The enemy, and then yeah. Hatred, blame, your primary dedication of yours on disinformation. I saw that you gave testimony on Capitol Hill, House Gov on June 22nd, 2020, on the dangers of disinformation. So everything's here, right? We have the, as she succinctly said, stop the blame. Tyranny feeds on polarity and blame and grievance. And to dissolve the disinformation. So I have you been feeling a flood of that, or you've been too focused on grief to be distracted by the disinformation craziness?
Well, it's interesting. I do agree with basically everything she said. I mean, the outpouring of love and community, has been enormous. We aren't in Pasadena, Altadena right now. We were able to get up to the Central Coast, but I know that around the Pasadena area, there is an enormous amount of food, an enormous amount of water, clothing, toys for kids. People have really banded together there. I'm hearing from people that I haven't spoken to in decades, just checking in to see how I'm doing, and you know, random strangers in the hotel where we've been staying, they're just, you know, sort of sharing their sympathy. I mean, there's a real outpouring of togetherness here, and a realization that whatever you think of California, whatever you think of Los Angeles, this is bad, and people's lives are going to be totally upended. And I think particularly for Altadena, you know, because it is, like you were talking about, this very middle class, very diverse community. I think a lot of the anger, or maybe sort of, you know, lack of seriousness from people is about the Palisades, where, you know, celebrities have their $5 million second homes. And I haven't actually really been following the Palisades fire all that much because of what we've been going through. But Altadena is a very different type of community, and it's a community where people watch out for each other and really care about each other. I'm on so many text chains and WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups. You know, it's just keeping up with the communications is a full-time job. And I will tell you that in those groups, in the groups of Altadena, Pasadena residents, people aren't talking about blame. People aren't talking about Gavin Newsom or Karen Bass or anything like that. It really is just, when are the schools going to open? What do people need? You know, here's a resource for mental health. Here's a resource for, you know, childcare. People are not focused on disinformation, conspiracy theories, plots, blaming anybody. It's just about sort of helping everybody out and getting through all of this. I think nationally, certainly there is a real draw to disinformation and conspiracism, because like a lot of other sort of life-changing events, this is huge and it's unexpected. You know, you don't expect something like this to happen. And I think when you have an event like that, it really is a petri dish for conspiracy theories and disinformation and rumors, you know, rumors spreading about FEMA giving out vouchers, rumors spreading of, you know, your GoFundMe is going to affect your insurance payout, you know, all of these things, because people just don't know. I mean, no one's gone through this, and now we're all going through it, and we're all just really doing the best we can. We all have mile-long to-do lists, and I've been talking to friends of ours who they got their water shut off, but they haven't talked to their insurance adjuster. Well, we talked to our insurance adjuster, but we haven't gotten our water shut off. It's 8 million impossible things, all of which then lead to more things that you have to do. You make one call, you then need to make three calls. You fill out one form, well, you have to print it out and you have to send it in. Well, do you have a printer? Do you have Wi-Fi? You know, do you have pants to put on to go to a place where you can print something out? It's just every decision becomes so hyper-focused, you just can't think bigger picture. And I think there's so many people just going through this right now. And the best thing I think people who are outside of LA can do is just check in on these folks and just ask specifically, what do they need and how can they help?
Yeah. Yeah. And then it is everything that you are dedicated to. The, you know, we go, okay, community, then you love Altadena, and it does resonate in those rare pockets of actual community and diversity. And, you know, again, poignancy is kinship. There was an interview with a black man in Altadena standing in the ruins, and he said, you know, I went to get my mother, and then we went to go check on my sister, and I go, oh, no, her car's still there, and we found her body in the house. And then he said, yeah, it's taken everything from us, the air, like, the air, our soul, our kinship. And we go, we are with you, you know. And it's voices like yours, you know, and voices like these stories that, you know, bring us into, like, you know, kinship and you know, reciprocal blessing and mutual aid. And as you say, you know, it may be too soon, although you did say when you were on MSNBC, they cut off the part where you, at the end, you were like, and we will rise, we will rebuild, you know.
I said Altadena will rebuild.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what about the comments coming in, you know, that the straw bale houses were, you know, were fireproof, or, and people saying, you know, and hempcrete doesn't burn. And just to put those on the altar of desirable rebuilding mystery, right? I mean, how to respond ingeniously and collaboratively. Yeah, does that
Yeah.
resonate with yourself?
It does. I know among my community there is a real drive to rebuild the town. I know people who are already getting calls from real estate speculators who want to buy up their property for, nickels on the dollar, basically, and turn Altadena into, another sort of, flat plain of condos and identical McMansions. And no one wants that. I think people want our town back. We want our quirky little artist community and our generational Black families. We want all that back. And there will be some concession to fireproofing. And I don't know that anyone knows what that looks like yet, whether that's underground power lines, whether that's, fire breaks at the base of the mountains. I don't know that really is percolating in anyone's mind yet, but I think the drive to rebuild Altadena in a way that is consistent with the houses that survived, and a number of houses did survive, and you have these beautiful 100-year-old craftsman cottages, you have these mid-century modern homes that nothing like this exists anywhere else. I grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and it's like there's three templates of house, and it's like A, B, and C. These are homes that have been lovingly maintained, lovingly restored. It's the architectural history of the West. And I think people really want that back. And I do think there need to be ways that it's a little more secure and a little more fireproof and a little more sustainable. I think that's going to come with creative architecture and sort of community togetherness. That's down the line. But I know right now people really want to come back. And there's a real drive to not sell out, not let the developers get their hooks in, and really protect what made Altadena so special.
No, it's a crucial strategy time, right? I mean, it's like, again, to put the desirable and to there are people. Southern California is in Los Angeles, rich with people who've been dedicated to ingenious solutions to this for a long time, part of the Bioneers community. And it's like, right, okay, so calling all accomplices, who brought what, who knows how to do what. And these are people of deep cultivation. So we're kind of sending out the call. And you, we'll take a short break music in a moment, but you also have, GoFundMes listed on your Blue Sky site, for displaced Black families and all of that, this, again, mutual aid and to and fro. And, sure. You'd said, again, your livelihood is books and things. And so, and your Patreon account, and we want to replenish yourself for your noble narrative, indefatigable, even though you're exhausted self, we're really grateful. So the storm is upon us, and Jewish space lasers, I'm going to get those, Mike's website is the Mike Roths, R-O-T-H-S, child.com, journalist, author, conspiracy expert. And we go, right, well, the storm is upon us in many, many ways. And as an astro mythologist, let me just insert that when we had the full moon and the moon occulted Mars, we go, oh, that's good. There are images for each degree of the zodiac, and the image for where they were was a furious storm in a residential canyon. And it's like, well, everything's talking to us. Everything's talking to us.
Yeah.
And on the other side, we might talk about inauguration. Everything's got meaning if we track it back. It came from the augur, the diviner within everybody, who walked out into nature, and nature would reveal the best shot at a responsible human, and then they would be inaugurated. That's where it comes from, right? So we might want to reconvene on the other side about, well, what shall we inaugurate? And and then also where you've relocated to, but do you have access to, a tree, a country, a piece of land that you love?
We do. We're up in the San Luis Obispo right now. We're staying near family, and they've got some land, and we've been able to run our kids and dogs around outside, and the air is really fresh up here. It's not the toxic stew and Pasadena, that's starting to clear up, but who knows with the wind that's coming in the next day or two.
Well,
so we've been able to get away from it a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's why we're going to take a little short break music with Bob Marley, because one of the geniuses of reggae music is the darker the lyrics, the jauntier the tune. Our more than perfect for today guest is Mike Rothschild, denizen of Altadena, whose eloquent elegy you can find on his website, and we'll be right back after this brief message from Bob Marley. Team, this is the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Our perfect for now guest, Mike Rothschild, is our guest. That was Bob Marley's public service announcement with Natural Mystic. And we go, ooh. So wherever you want to go, Mike Rothschild, as I said backstage, I will offer, you know, guidelines or questions, and you go anywhere you want, you know. But I did think, you know, inauguration, right? And just the to feel Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is everywhere. And I like just Craven saying, it's coming for you. It's coming for everybody. And how we're going to take care of ourselves. And what guiding story shall we inaugurate? And what is our Project 2025? This is just put on the work altar for everybody, you know. What story shall we unfold? Just the thought that this is coming for you. And let me aspire to hand it back to you, Mike Rothschild. When you know, before the break, you know, you go, yes, you have land, and yes, you can appreciate it. So for those of us not in the heat of the thing, you know, immediately, or you've escaped from it, and there's the tremendous grief, and I mean, all of that complexity. But for those who can touch the earth. You know, it's like to plight our troth to being better earth citizens and to somehow do impossible things, you know, to inhale back authority from the oil and gas community. And then let me toss to you, there's books on the redemptive power of uncertainty. A woman wrote a book that said, when we're uncertain, new neurological pathways of ingenuity open up. And is that something you want to vote for? Like, raise your hand if you'd like that, Mike Rothschild.
Sure. I will say that we have, you know, my family and our community have been tested in a way that, you know, we just didn't even know existed, you know, a week and a half ago. I mean, where we're staying right now, there's still Christmas decorations up. And it's like, oh, that was another life. That life ended a week and a half ago. We'll get it back. But right now, every day is sort of this different journey. Every morning starts with a list of things that we may or may not get done. And some of them are really complicated and some of them are really simple. But the ingenuity that we are having to show and that, you know, certainly my kids are having to show, my kids are 10 and 8 and, they're coming up with ideas and lists and then, you know, at other times they're totally breaking down and, you know, so are we, you know, it is a very uncertain immediate path ahead. I mean, I think we know kind of generally where we're headed. But we don't know when, you know, we don't even know when their school is going to reopen, where they're going to do school, how that's going to work, when they're going to see their friends, when we're going to be able to put our phones down. You know, it's like the phone, which I've wanted to spend less time on, becomes this kind of third hand that you can't put it down. Like you walk around with it just because you think somebody might text me. We went to grab lunch, just my wife and I, and siren, you know, fire truck goes by and everyone's just sitting there and having their lunch. And we're both like looking around, like, where do we go? What do we do? The trauma is just beginning. And it's going to manifest in a lot of ways. And you know, unfortunately, you mentioned inauguration and I think, you know, certainly that's coming in a few days and certainly there are political ramifications for it, but I think there's also a way in which the country's attention is going to shift and people will move on and people will know that, oh, you know, those fires happened. I wonder how those people are doing. And I think if there is something of a national spotlight, they'll probably continue to be on the Palisades simply because of the celebrity and the wealth and the opulence. And, you know, you understand why, but thousands and thousands of families are burned out of Altadena or can't go home. If they do have homes, they can't go back. We have really, really close friends, the ones who saved their house by dumping buckets of water and embers. Their house is there. They just can't go back because there's no water and the air is still toxic and there's nothing around them. So, you know, I would say that, you know, I would hope that people just sort of remember that the people of Southern California are not going to be okay for a long, long time. And to just sort of be gentle and keep checking in on us because we're going to need it today, certainly, but in a month and in 3 months and in 6 months, we're still not going to have houses. And 1,000 things will have happened between now and then. So I would just ask people to keep us in your hearts. And keep us on, I was going to say Rolodex, but I don't think anybody knows what that means anymore.
That's adorable. Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, expand the embrace, and backwards and forwards, you know, again, you could be saying the people of Asheville, North Carolina, again, the floods and the fires and for everybody, it's not isolated crises. It's crisis of isolation. I mean, it's all one thing. You know, again, the floods and the fire and the thing and the community and the tyranny and the take care of each other, you know, and that dedication. So, yeah, so Asheville, that's what I meant by the expanding community of grieving. And, you know, and Gaza, you know, people say Los Angeles looks like a bomb went off, looks like Hiroshima looks like Gaza. It looks like, I mean, this you know, in this conflagration of, you know, ill manners by our rogue species, those are just going, you know, boom, and we take the fossil fuels, not conspiracy that humans set this fire, you know, but that it's long term coming, and here we are, you know, and then, you know, and who brought what? And you, the reason I also said, yeah, inaugurate actually means something, and I am just encouraging us, sure, as, you know, this is a show of participatory animism and social action. So it's like, well, however you choose to spend the inaugural day, which is Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, by the way.
Sure.
You know, right. It's like, yeah, in some form, you know, to go to a place that you love. And, you know, how can we humans humbly cooperate with nature's guiding genius that we call trickster? That is what comes alive, like raven and coyote and seeds that sprout after cataclysm, you know, in nature and in humans is part of the parallel. So, yeah. And I guess just the ongoing, you know, Jess Craven saying, it's no one's fault but oil and gas. Stay focused, stay focused. And I mean, I gather, you know, you are in this deep, deep place. And how can people support you, Mike Rothschild? How can you be replenished? Shall we send them to your book, The Storm is Upon Us? Is that particularly useful to us now? Sure, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, what I've been asking people to do is really support my Patreon, which is patreon.com/Mike Rothschild, Rothschild. I find a real calling right now to bear witness to this and to document it. Yeah. You know, my wife is like, are you really going to stay up and write? You know, why don't you just go to bed? You're exhausted. I said, I got to get this out. You know, I'm going to forget it, to say nothing less of, you know, what other people are going to do. I feel like I need to write this down. I need to speak out. I need to do interviews. I need to talk to people. I need to connect people with other journalists. You know, I can't not work for the next 2 years. But unfortunately, I've had to put everything on hold. I was trying to develop another book. I was working on developing a scripted TV series, and, you know, nothing's happening. So right now, I think the way to make sure that I'm able to bring in a little bit of income long term, you know, after the GoFundMe's dry up and after, you know, insurance pays out whatever it's going to pay out, is to go to patreon.com/Mike Rothschild, go to my website, themikerothschild.com. I'm trying to write as much as I can to just sort of help people understand what is going on here and help me understand what's going on here. You know, for me, you know, I grew up in the, I think I said this earlier, I can't really remember. I grew up in the Midwest, and it was very much, you know, don't talk about it, push it down, you know, we don't discuss these things, and I'm trying to discuss it, and this is a way to help me do that.
No, I think that's really crucial and important, and we can tease it into everyone's heart right now. You know, it's like all the traditions are when going through, you know, a huge, deep thing, you know, we only have the power of an insight once we've given external creative expression to this inner invisible experience, and you're doing that. And that's why we're, yeah, grateful for you as the part of a part of the team that in this is going, I must, you said, document and narrate, and for all of us to give outward expression, again, outward visible expression to the inner invisible thing. It's you know, for a long time, my team in Northern California knows this, but I like changing the word trauma to my dangerous, beautiful assignment, you know, because it really works it. And it's like the Parkland youth really did that. They took that as their dangerous, beautiful assignment,
yeah,
and to work it. And that's, in a sense, the you part of all of us is taking it's a dangerous, beautiful assignment to give expression, to work it, to cook it. Because what drew me to you when I found your essay on, I guess your initial essay, was like, ooh, this is a great voice. Thank you, Mike Rothschild. Mm-hmm. And this takes us into, yes, micro details that resonate as kinship, right? And it was, you know, it was just, I bow to your lucidity and that you brought Altadena alive in a way. I'm going, Oh, I could have lived there, you know. I could have lived there,
oh,
Odessa,
yeah.
and Beirut. Those are my favorite places, right? You know, it's like those are really, you know, great places. And, you know, and all homage, you know, we've said this in the last week, you know, and people know this, but also in Altadena was the Theosophical Society, also a
right.
house that goes back to the, you know, late 19th century and 40,000 books and original manuscripts
right.
from medieval mystics.
I drove by it almost every day.
Yeah, no, it's a power. I presented there, you know, again, it's, you know, people used to think I was Helen Pieplowski, but no, I'm not. But yeah, and you know, sacred art from the King of Siam. Yeah, all ashes, right? And, you know, what I've been saying, you know, is like, how do we not in the thick of it? You're in the thick, medium thick of it, you know, but it behooves those of us who aren't to back you up, you know, and to think of, you know, again, you know, to wish liberating blessings. And when the Bamiyan Buddhas were exploded by the Taliban, you know, one way to think of it, like, oh, you know, beautiful thing lost, you know, but may the prayers and dedication in those Buddhas then waft into collective atmosphere, you know. And in a sense, with the Theosophical Society, you know, very significant, you know, may those teachings, you know, inform group mind, there we go, and I love your dedication, may the beauty of the convivial community of Altadena that you really bring alive, like, you know, may that also, you know, be honored, you know, be in a collective atmosphere, because you painted with words, you know, and I could see the ball games and I could see the different people. So yeah, and then, you know, and I don't want to make you go to The Storm Is Upon Us or Jewish Space Lasers when you're appropriately centered in grief, you know, so you don't need to do that. But I guess Jess Craven really kind of handled it about saying, everybody just stop with the blame. Oh, that's right. You really addressed it. It's not happening in real people's lives in Los Angeles, the conspiracy stuff, right? That's a larger thing. That's for us to dissolve. But the issue of community versus cult is unfurling before us. And that will perhaps call you back into the to and fro fray. What occasioned you speaking to the House Committee on something or other in 2022?
I was invited to do that when Democrats still had the House to talk about election fraud, disinformation, and in particularly preparing for the midterms. And, you know, one of the things I talked about was this idea that these election deniers were running for Secretary of State positions in Nevada and Arizona and I think maybe Michigan. And, you know, these are people who in a lot of ways have sort of control over how elections are administered. And it's probably not a great idea to have election deniers in control of elections. You know, are these people just going to decide who wins? And fortunately, in 22, those candidates did not do well. You know, we saw Republicans in general not do well, but in particular, in 22, I guess they took the House back, but very narrowly. It's all blurring together. But a lot of these really extreme candidates did not do well. And so I had the opportunity to go and testify to Congress, and it was a real experience, and it was a very, you know, something I really was glad that I did. I hope at some point I'm able to do it again. You know, maybe sometime this century.
tragedy has prevented you from watching the horrific confirmation hearings. We hope, right?
I haven't seen one second of it.
No, good for you. Good for you. That's important. You don't need to. You've suffered enough. But it is super pertinent. So you go, election deniers, how about the attorney general being an election denier? How about the Department of Defense guy being a crusader who chants to kill all Muslims? How about here's the contrast I just want to make, which is the beauty of Altadena, the beauty of Los Angeles, the beauty of people being kind and taking care of each other, in contrast to this really thuggish, lowest form of oligarchy, Inquisition hybrid, right? It's a pretty high contrast, right?
Yeah.
So I think that they're all wearing, you know, a terrible cologne, Hegseth Musk, you know, anyway. But so it's the worst of people. It's the worst of people. And you're relating, and Jess Craven, you know, is relating to the best of people. And we're talking to the best of people in Northern California and Los Angeles and, you know, good citizens. And how shall we all tend each other? And that radiates through your writing. I mean, there is an invitation in there. And, you know, so yes, absolutely, that's good. People can support you. And, you know, and then for all of us, you know, the images right now are, you know, the if we don't know what to do, invite in what does, you know. And again, those of us not in the thick of it, and you're in the just slightly 1 inch removed from the thick of it, you know, what shall we all do for those who cannot, you know? You know, and how shall we, you know, go way ancient, you know? People were talking about, you know, again, our indigenous allies and nature, you know, which is if you're not in the middle of the storm, talk to the storm. You know, what's it saying?
Yeah.
I have a wonderful ally, firefighter. When he came on the air, we changed it in his firehouse like that to fire responder. And he says, you know, we fire responders are mythological animists. We don't talk about it in public, right? But we know the fire, each fire has a character. And we call it the red dragon, this one, you know, because then you can shapeshift into... Then you see the water on the thing and converse with it, and they said even cut a deal. It's like backstage, like, oh water, oh fire, we have been very bad earth citizens. Can we negotiate to have some more of what's coming at us be metaphoric rather than literal, you know? And backstage Trekster Nature goes, what are you putting on the table? And just the astro guiding of inauguration or thing, you know, says it's just a powerful time that you're embodying of dedication and just doing the expressive work before you, which is contributing to everybody very well. Anyway, so could we say that you're working trauma into dangerous, beautiful assignment?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to look at this unique position that I have of somebody who writes about disinformation, conspiracy theories, and sort of why people get pulled into these things while I'm at the center of this event that has driven all of this disinformation and conspiracy theories. It's a strange place to be, and I would rather not be in it, but I am. You know, there's no, you know, my kids have been saying, you know, we want to go home. Well, this is kind of home now, and we didn't pick it. wasn't our idea, but here it is. And we
it's
just
a
have
world.
To do the best
it's a
we
world
can.
Of refugees. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. You feel like a refugee.
Yeah, no, and it's a world of refugees. I mean, we know from the virologists that, you know, wrote the books, you know, Spillover before COVID. You know that. When will the pandemic end? When humans quit despoiling habitat, you know? That's what the straight grown-up scientists say. And it's like, well, yeah, there we have it. Pandemics arise when humans are disturbing a natural environmental harmony. And then the second century writers said, pandemics always arrive when tyrants are in power. So we go, well, there's that too. You know, Yeah, and then do you have let me you know, QAnon, right? And so some years back I was wondering, like, how did QAnon and these kinds of toxic conspiracy take over the yoga community and the astrology community? And I go, dogma. Anytime people derive status from something they haven't earned, they're unstable and hungry for compensatory condescension. We know when you don't, you know. So I'm going for dogma is what gives rise. So you hum with that?
Sure. You know, I think what drives a lot of that, of course, my book, The Storm is Upon Us, is about QAnon. And one of the things I wrote about is this kind of QAnon / wellness convergence. And I think where a lot of these things come from, and a lot of the conspiracy theories that I'm starting to see right now, is sort of like detoxing from the fires and the smoke. And, you know, if you drink this oil or, you know, sun this part of your body, you'll get the toxins out. it's a feeling of I know something you don't know, and right. Kind of a smug certainty of you've got the secret knowledge. You know what they don't want you to know. And look at all these sheeple over here just taking their pills and all that. And it, that's what drives a lot of this stuff, is this idea of we've got the secrets, we've got the forbidden knowledge, and we're going to, you know, we're going to share it with you, but all for a price, because you haven't earned it yet. And I think when you have very uncertain times, people are really trying, they're groping for answers. And we're seeing that certainly micro level with the fires. You know, people want to know very concrete answers. You know, when are the schools going to open? When is my water going to be safe? But I think there's also bigger questions here, bigger philosophical questions, engineering questions, scientific questions. Most of those questions don't have answers yet. And in the absence of answers, we gravitate toward people who are just telling us things that sound good and plausible and maybe that dovetail with things we already believe. So people are very vulnerable right now in general, and in particular due to these disasters. People are very vulnerable to easy answers, get-rich-quick schemes, quack cures.
Yep. All right, we're on our way up, Mike Rothschild, but I want to just invite your wizard self, right? If you would have a blessing. Everybody have standards. Whatever you want to waft out into the memosphere now would be good.
Yeah, I would say just listen to your, you know, listen to people who know what they're talking about, experts. Yeah. Listen to your gut. You know, if something feels too good to be true, it probably is.
That's great. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mike Rothschild, our guest journalist, author, conspiracy expert. And we say, this is Caroline Casey signing off, and it says, you know, inner dedication strengthens our outward signal so we can be danced into place. There we go. We will reconvene again next week. CoyoteNetworkNews.com. Thank you, team. Thank you, Kirsten May. Oh, yeah,